At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi,
featuring former FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, Robin Dreek.
It's confusion. It seems like to me there's a lot of issues here of trying to deceive one for their own means. The fact that Doug is there loading a U-Haul, and she's already talked to an attorney saying, I don't want to do this. And so why is Doug there? If this is what you want, why is he hanging out? Why is this part of the equation at all? And why did mom take the daughter somewhere else? To your point about questioning, and this moment actually takes place where she pulls a gun and kills him.
Yeah, her that behavior into itself, just the gun, pull, shoot. I mean, that just, it so stands out in my mind. I would love to see texts between the mom and the daughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think those. I think that's going to be very revealing in this case. When those things get high, I mean, doesn't that happen with every single case we have? Like,
yes.
we have this certain viewpoint of things, and then all of a sudden we see the text messages and we're like, oh.
Well, and texts are interesting because it's a look in text and Google searches. Those are the two things.
Mm-hmm.
Because those go into the mind. Those are sometimes things that you may not even say out loud. But it's for some reason we have more of ability to express those things in writing. So yes, those are going to be key pieces in this. I think the digital footprint's going to be very fascinating on this case. It just still leaves you wondering, you know, how and why did all this take place? Let me ask you this, because there was testimony from Ashley where we actually did hear earlier. I remember hearing this audio of her talking about an incident where Doug pulled a gun out of the accusation. And this is an accusation. The judge said this, she thinks it's a bunch of bunk and that this never really happened. But she says that he pulled the gun in initial testimony from his waistband and shot around into the air. In further testimony, she says, oh, he pulled it from the boot. Now, having a gun pulled on you is a kind of traumatic event, especially if it's something that you don't normally have happen, which I think most of us don't normally have happen. But you remember it. You remember every second of it. And you remember where it came from. Yes, it's a traumatic event, but it's one of those things that doesn't necessarily, I think, get misconstrued of pulling from a boot versus a waistband. I was in a situation once, and I can speak from experience on this. This isn't just my own conjecture. I was in a relationship where that all ended, obviously, but a gun got pulled on me because they were in a very depressive, suicidal state, and it was going back and forth. And I remember every freaking second of that. I'm not going to ever misconstrue that moment and go, oh, maybe she pulled it from her purse, or maybe she pulled, like, no, I can tell you exactly where that came from. What does that say about Ashley's story, the fact that she can mix up something that key?
Well, to me, it shows it's a story.
Yeah.
You know, it's incongruent. There's no consistency with the story. And the story sounds like a story. It sounds like something she read in a book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really doesn't it? I mean, yeah. You know, the bad guy pulled it from his boot. Bad guy pulled it from waistband.
Yeah.
I've never used that language.
No.
I mean, it's just, it's not that it's wrong. I never accuse anyone of lying.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't know.
We don't.
But
know. Yeah.
But it gives me pause. Like, boy, the choice of language and the choice of words are interesting. And the inconsistency in the stories where you would remember it extremely well, just because when fight or flight hits and time slows down, like you so articulately said, you remember every single moment. Because every second seems like a day, mm-hmm. because it's that slow moving. That's why we lose dexterity. That, I mean, literally, you know, kind of going back to what we're talking about the attempt on former President Trump's life, when we saw the Secret Service agent having a hard time putting her gun back in her holster, because we lose dexterity, because for her in that moment, time was moving slow. I mean, we've all experienced this, you know, if you remember being in a dream and you feel like you're trying to run, you can't really run, and you're so frustrated. That's what happens when your frontal cortex gets flooded with all those fight or flight hormones. Mm-hmm. You just can't move. You lose dexterity, but also you remember everything. You feel frozen in time as you're trying to move. And that's why training is the thing that kicks in, so your body hits natural reaction, so you don't have to think, because you're really not thinking in those moments. You're just seeing and absorbing. And so the fact that she has an inconsistent recollection of that is interesting.
Well, and also the fact that a judge has already said, the quote is, "I don't believe there's one scintilla of truth to your abuse allegations." This was when they were going through the custody battle. That's going to be an interesting one to play to a jury. I know they were trying to get that excluded. I don't believe they did. So there's a lot that's not working in her favor. I'm basing my opinion here on what exists right now in the evidence from what we know. I'm not going to say she's innocent. I'm not going to say she's guilty, because I don't know. But if you're to put all of the things on a scale, right now there's a lot of inconsistencies in her story that makes you go, it's going to be fascinating once all the evidence comes out. That's why we have a court. That's why we have trials to determine all of those sorts of things. But there's not a lot of evidence here on her part other than her claims. How is that going to play to a jury?
I really think it's going to come down to texting between her and her mom. If texts exist, I think that's going to be that's what's going to nail this.
That's going to be very fascinating. It's an angle I haven't even thought of, Robin. So I'm fascinated to see and wonder what we're going to find out in that digital footprint, because that's something.
And here's why I say that, you know, so here's a young woman that when trauma and strife hit her life from her perception, what did she do? She ran home.
Mm-hmm.
And then her mom seems to be a bit involved in her life.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're doing crazy things and your mom's still involved in your life, the likelihood, and she's not talking anywhere else. She's talking somewhere. We, as human beings, we have a need for an outlet somewhere. I got a feeling that outlet's the mom, again, just from what the limited things we see. And I think there's going to be some sort of messaging, phone call, something between her and her mom that's going to be very revealing in this entire thing.
And it doesn't even necessarily mean that it's, you know, mom sitting there egging her on like, yeah, go take him out. But more so, what is she saying to her mom? And is mom sitting there going, I know my daughter is very impulsive. There might be some sort of disorder or something going on here. I'm constantly trying to calm her down, trying to be that voice of reason. That's going to be very interesting to see what that conversation looks like. Because I think you're right. That's going to be a very revealing part of this, far more than the little bit of physical evidence that exists, which looks like a scratch on the side from a box, not necessarily abuse.
And I think what we might see is, you know, because again, you have his daughter, which seems to be very close to her dad, and you know, to have these great recollections. So I think you're going to see possibly, again, pure conjecture, a compare and contrast between healthy interactions and potentially unhealthy interactions between a mom and her daughter and a father and his daughter.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think those are what's going to stand opposing to each other. And I think that's what the jury's going to see.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.